Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello, welcome back to another episode. This is our sixth episode. I can't believe we've done six episodes already. It feels like a week ago.
I still feel like I'm on my second one.
Well, you act like you're on your second one.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just kidding. Well, welcome back. We are obviously live right now on X, YouTube, and Rumble. We're trying out this new feature from StreamYard. So you'll see that the chat does pop up on Marat's face. Thankfully, not mine, but you'll see your comments there. If you hate it, let us know and we'll take it down. It is in like beta testing, so we're just kind of trying it out. And if you catch us on the replay, we're obviously available on Spotify or wherever else you get your podcast. I'm not sure if we're on video yet on Spotify, but that is an option that's available. If you like what we're doing, and want to help us keep going, please hit the links in the description or visit us at ddgeopolitics.com. There is merch. There is no tariffs, no taxes, no shipping. And Aria needs to make some new designs. Right now, it's a really good time for the No Sleep Till Transnistria design, which is a fantastic design that I came up with. And it goes along with what our episode is about today. Marat, how are you? How was your week? I think we both had the same opinion that it was like so much stuff happened, but did any of it really matter?
Nothing ever happens. my week was good. I hope you've been enjoying the warmer temperatures over here.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes, you know, some weeks you have so much material, then other weeks you're like, wait, what happened? You're like looking through Google News and figuring out, you know, what actually was last week and what was this week.
Yeah, there was a lot of that where I'm like searching for material. I'm like, no, that's May 5th. Is it all just keep keeps happening again and again, the same news?
All weekends blur together.
So someone just said a week rich in theatrics. Exactly that. That's what exactly, because we were both talking about it and I talked about it with a few other people. I'm like, it all's like conversations and like nothing really tangible was happening. And just for the sake of it all, I will say I finally started reading Jihad versus McWorld, which was a recommendation from Maine Wonk, who I know you all love to hate, but it's actually a really good book. And it's kind of about the symbiotic relationship between the West's hypercapitalism and jihad, which he refers to obviously as religious fundamentalism, and how they have a symbiotic relationship and kind of need each other in order to exist. Pretty interesting, which maybe goes along with our later segment in the show. But I guess we can get started with the Russia-Ukraine update as we usually start our weeks. Funnily enough, I had to tell Aria, I was like, the week started off with the Putin-Trump call. And he was like, it did? Like, it was like, oh my God, that feels so long. That was this week. Anyway, pointless Trump Ukraine or Trump Putin phone call. Call lasted over 2 hours. President Trump described it as excellent, radical. President Trump proposed a 30-day unconditional ceasefire in Ukraine. Zelensky had already agreed to this proposal. However, President Putin rejected it, insisting that any ceasefire must address Russia's demands. Why do we keep doing this? We talk about this every week.
Can you imagine talking to Trump for 2 hours? I'm sure an hour and a half of it was his like rambling about nothing.
Oh, I'm sure.
I feel bad for anyone that has to sit through like that long of a conversation with them. But
I think I would sit with him for 2 hours just for the content.
Well, I mean, you can put the phone down and walk away and then he would just keep going. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we go through this every week. We have, you know, a conversation that, felt productive and, you know, was helpful and blah, blah, blah. And then, we go right back into where we were right before it.
Well, exactly that. I mean, Putin obviously rejected the immediate ceasefire that was offered. But he said he did say he was willing to engage in further peace talks, which is another kind of rerun. But here's his actual part of his actual reaction.
Добрый вечер. Меня коллеги просили сказать несколько слов о результатах нашего телефонного разговора с президентом Соединенных Штатов. Президент Соединенных Штатов высказал свою позицию по поводу прекращения боевых действий, перемирия. И со своей стороны отметил также, что и Россия выступает за мирное урегулирование украинского кризиса. Мы должны просто определить наиболее эффективные пути движения к миру. При этом хочу отметить, что в целом позиция России ясна. Главное для нас – устранить первопричины этого кризиса.
He must get tired of repeating himself, so he's finding different ways. Now he's saying we must get rid of the root causes of this crisis, which everybody knows is neutrality, denazification, demilitarization. He's just saying it in a different way. So he must be, I don't know. I don't even know. Someone in the chat said it wasn't pointless. Maybe it wasn't pointless. It's good that they talked.
I feel like this is a real, like, this is a Russian W, in my opinion, because Russia gets to be flexible in their diplomacy. They get to, you know, have these conversations with the U.S. and kind of avoid sanctions and avoid looking bad, you know, just in an optic sense by, you know, sitting down and having these talks. At the same time, they are able to operate on the battlefield with almost with impunity. I mean, they're able to operate and show their strength, and that way they're able to return to the negotiating table from a position of strength. And that each time, you know, whether it's just kind of a show, just to kind of impose an ultimatum or to try to get more concessions, they're able to return to the negotiating table with a better position and with strength to have as leverage. But at the same time, you know, when we read the story in the news and kind of just follow it as it's going, Russia's coming to the negotiating table each time. So Russia is you know, open to talks, but they're doing so each time from a position of strength. So overall, this is very strong on Russia's part. And I do see the strategy. I just don't think they're ready to pull the plug on it yet. I think they're writing it out. And
I agree. You know, what's going right now. I don't think that we read it on, I don't know if it was our stream or our Thursday stream, but we read out a short essay by Lydia, who actually, one of our admin who's in Russia, and her opinion was basically like that Putin and the Russians were using the Americans to make them, like, basically to make themselves look better. And that now that's really showing that they've gained a lot of leverage, a lot of assets just by participating in negotiations with the idiotic Americans.
You just see where the Americans are. I mean, at this point, we're spectators, where we kind of observe from the sidelines, but we don't have any sort of sway in this, really, as it stands right now.
Well, there were reactions across the board. Obviously, Zelensky. Obviously, Zelensky said, had a really bad reaction to it. He said, it's our land. We won't withdraw our troops from our territory. It means that they don't want peace if they demand what they know we won't agree to. He took to Twitter to say, this is a defining moment. The world can now see whether its leaders are truly capable of securing a ceasefire and achieving real lasting peace. At the beginning of our bilateral conversation, I reaffirmed to President Trump that Ukraine is ready for a full and unconditional ceasefire, as was spoken about, particularly the United States. It is important to not dilute this proposal. If the Russians are not ready to stop the killings, there must be stronger sanctions. Pressure on Russia will push it toward real peace. So Zelensky wants more sanctions. And then, of course, the EU chimed in and they're upset because they feel that Trump kind of took additional sanctions off the table and that that the USA was stepping back from its mediating role. Aria's favorite, Kaya Kallas, said, I'm reading this out because I just love it. She said she had been through the five stages of grief over the transatlantic relationship and had reached the stage of acceptance. And this is a direct quote. The issue of trust is like a vase. You broke the vase, you can glue it back together, but it is not the same vase. What a girl thing to say.
What is it? A Theseus ship from philosophy? It's the same concept. It's like, is it the same shift if you change?
She's so melodramatic, and Macron's upset as well. The UK and Europe announced their own major package of sanctions, and obviously we saw Putin's reaction, and he also called Trump very pragmatic. In the White House readout in the leaked summary, Trump did not commit to recognizing new territorial losses to recognizing new Russian borders. He emphasized the need for lasting ceasefire. He urged Putin to scale down the escalation in the Kharkiv region and reportedly to improve the optics ahead of the next round of talks. So he wants Putin to calm down. And then he kind of, after the talk, had this to say, which was, I want your opinion on.
You know, we had ours stolen. We are the designer of it. We had it stolen during the Obama administration. They stole it. You know who stole it? The Russians stole it. Something bad happened. But we're the designer of it. We're now building them and lots of them.
So, I mean, in a way, it's kind of sad, but this is what Trump is reduced to, is that we're like, because he's not able to show any strength, like in real world terms, like today, he does these like theater kid, like references in passing during speeches or something. Like, so he'll just like make these overtures to like, oh yeah, Russia bad. They like did this bad thing 15 years ago. And meanwhile, like there's a whole conflict going on like right in front of you and you know, nothing. So yeah, I mean, it's just sad. I mean, yeah, he's talking about something from the Obama era that was stolen. And I mean, it's just chatter, right? Like it doesn't mean anything. It's actually some commencement speech.
I do fear, though, you know, obviously we're both pretty rational. I do fear, though, that a lot of MAGA base really does take what he says at face value and takes it as, I don't want to say gospel, but for lack of a better term. So I don't know. When he says stuff like this, I have to play it because it's hilarious, but.
Yeah, I don't know how much his base, I mean, you're right, they do take a lot of what he says and then they will follow it. But like, I don't know how much of an like appetite there is for beef with Russia. So like at best, they'll just do these like kind of retroactive, you know, things from the past, but it's never going to be of gearing up for a conflict today, right? You just never hear that from him.
No, there won't be any talk of that. So keep in mind, the call did take place on May 19th. On May 20th, Ukraine commenced one of their largest drone attacks on Russia. Russia reported that it shot down over 600 drones. So imagine how many were launched if they shot 600 down. So that attack lasted from May 20th to the 22nd and then kind of petered out with some additional smaller attacks. Russia started, or I'm sorry, on May 23rd, there was a 1K prisoner swap. Russia, which this is an interesting one, and it's funny because as soon as that was agreed upon, Arya said, well, Russia's going to get all its POWs back and Ukraine's only going to get like a percentage of theirs. And that's exactly what happened. Russia got almost all of their POWs back fighters returning home from the Kursk and Kharkiv fronts. And then Ukraine received only 10% of its total POWs. And there's rumors swirling around that Ukraine was lacking POWs to even trade, that they had to go round up political prisoners from other oblasts. So Ukraine's not really in that great a shape. But then Russia commenced their assault. And I think we have a video of that. This is actually from last night. Russia's assault last night for us. Russia's assault started two nights ago. This is from the most recent night. Thank you. Ukraine got wrecked. And he, there was the first
immersive footage. Yeah, that was crazy.
The first night Russia launched one of its largest drone and missile attacks on Kyiv since the start of the war. At least 250 drones and 14 ballistics. That was the first night overwhelming air defenses in Kyiv and hitting the port in Odessa. Last night, dozens of drones, calibers, Tu-195s, 160s, lighting up everything. This morning, the Russians were obviously on a victory lap with Medvedev posting this. Just, man. I think he said something along the lines, if military aid to the Banderite regime continues, the buffer zone could look like this. So the entirety of Ukraine. And then we also have Russia commencing another attack tonight. What do you think is happening? What does this mean for peace talks? And what message is this sending to Trump?
Well, mainly, I think this is testing Trump's resolve. That's what they've been doing all this time, really, is checking his temperature. And I mean, I think they're just trying to see what he says or what he does. As I mentioned, they have the strength that they're, you know, at their disposal. They have a lot of leverage, you know, that they're coming with. And this is just a kind of the delta between, you know, the negotiation talks and what actually happens in practice is just trying to see what Trump does. But for now, he seems to have been rather deferential to Russia. So why not? Why wouldn't they just continue on this path? But yeah, I mean, they obviously feel a lot of strength right now, as you can see from Medvedev's posts there. And so right now they're just trying to squeeze out, you know, whatever they can from Ukrainian leadership or Zelensky.
I also think it's a testament to the Russians that obviously you saw the numbers counting, is that one target was hit 20 times. I believe civilian casualties were under a dozen, which is remarkable. And grateful for that. As the one footage you could see, they were shooting from inside of the shelters, and I know that they utilize Kyiv Metro. But I do want to point out that I really, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was 11 civilians, and every civilian life is a tragedy. But I think it speaks volumes about the Russians that in one of the largest assaults on the Capitol, that less than a dozen less than a dozen Ukrainians lost their lives, while I think we lost over 500 in the last like 3 days in Gaza alone. So I think that's important to point out. Maybe I'm moral fagging, as people like to say, but I don't know. I think it's. And speaking of Israel, oh well, really quickly, we'll show you what's going on with Russia right now. Another drone strike incoming into Ukraine. We'll obviously keep you guys posted on the Telegram. Is the best place to find out about up-to-date strike news. And then I'll post the most important stuff on Twitter. But segueing into Israel, we have the very interesting week for sort of Israeli-U.S. relations. We still kind of have rumors of Trump and Bibi, but I kind of wanted to turn this over to you. We also had the shooting, which must be handled incredibly delicately. But yeah, what are your thoughts and how do you think this is all kind of going?
Yeah, real quick on last point I was going to add on, you know, in regards to Russia and the civilians, you know, I always do make this point, like there is something to be said about when you're at war with someone who's of the same sort of like civilizational culture as you, versus when you're facing off against someone of a different faith, and you see just a different level of atrocities and a different level of care for civilians, right? So yeah, in regards to the DC shooting, you know, on May 21st at approximately 9:08 p.m. Eastern, outside the Lillian and Albert Small Jewish Museum, there were there was a shooting. Two casualties, the suspect approached a group of four people exiting the museum, produced a handgun, and opened fire, striking two victims. The suspect had fired 21 times, shooting the victims in the back and continuing to fire at one victim as she attempted to crawl away. We learned that there was a free Palestine while a chant that the perpetrator had made right immediately following the shooting. The victims were Yaron Lyshinsky, age 30, a research assistant in Israeli embassy's political department. Lyshinsky was an advocate for the Abraham Accords and for interfaith dialogue.
Interesting.
And Sarah Lynn Milgram, age 26, organized missions and visits to Israel for the Israeli embassy. She was a devoted volunteer for Tech to Peace, an organization providing entrepreneurial training and conflict dialogue for young Israelis and Palestinians. The two victims were actually a couple, as we learned, and they were reportedly about to become engaged. Both, you know, were young professionals in the prime of their lives dedicated to diplomacy. Their deaths were mourned by the Israeli embassy, which had called them friends and colleagues. The perpetrator, we had learned, was Elias Rodriguez, age 31, from Chicago, Illinois. He was in D.C. for a work conference. He had no prior contact with the D.C. police. And there was a manifesto that was, an alleged manifesto was found later, attributed to Rodriguez, and it called for,
Don't read the manifesto. Hassan got banned from Twitch for reading the manifesto.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of interesting things going on with, as you mentioned, Hassan gets banned. I'll pause right there for
I don't want to get off on that tangent, but they've been wanting to ban Hassan for a very long time. So he's banned for misuse of terrorist material, something along those lines. I know it said terrorist material in there, but interesting. So he's a big proponent of the Abraham Accords. I did not know that Elias. Was there for a work conference. That's more suspicious. I thought he drove just from Chicago to Washington, D.C. to commit this act. I didn't realize that he was in D.C. for a work conference, and his work conference just happens to be during this gala at the Jewish Museum.
Sure. As for the Abraham Accords connection, that one is interesting as well, right? I'm not sure he had, staked out these victims for that long. Yeah. I think he was just trying to get, whoever he could. But, that connection is interesting as well. The major thing that day was the responses, right? We saw a lot of strong responses from Israel and, of course, Jewish leaders in Washington, and of course our own administration. And we kind of saw the expected reactions, right? So we saw Donald Trump express condolences on Truth Social, saying these horrible DC killings based obviously on anti-Semitism must end now. Hatred and radicalism have no place in the USA. We spoke with the Israeli ambassador, Yeko Leiter, and reiterated commitment to combating anti-Semitism. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt called the victims a beautiful young couple and emphasized prosecuting the suspect to the fullest extent. We saw Attorney General Pam Bondi vow to prosecute Rodriguez to the fullest extent of the law. The Director Kash Patel of the FBI labeled the attack targeted anti-Semitic violence and an act of terror. We saw D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser reassured the community that there was no active threat and emphasized unity, stating that we will not tolerate anti-Semitism. So a lot of the same sort of buzzwords being used, right? And so we saw strong reactions that were kind of meant to kind of echo this, we're going to be stringent on anti-Semitism and, kind of nip this in the bud. And that was the theme of a lot of the reactions that day was, what's going to be the aftermath of this? Like, where do we go from? How we can speak on Israel, how we can speak on the conflict, and how stringently that's looked at as being tied to, anti-Semitic violence versus, anti-Zionist criticism, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think we'd be remiss if we at least didn't admit that, obviously, I don't know whether it's being boosted or whether it's just more popular, that anti-Semitism is on the rise quite a bit, as well as other types of racism. I don't want to whataboutism, but anti-Semitism is definitely on the rise. I thought that this kind of ticked too many boxes. It ticked the Dr. Nick Rivera mentioned his last name, Rodriguez. So we're in a huge anti sort of Latin American deportations are the vibe right now or whatever. The two that did, that were tragically murdered, which they were murdered, weren't Jewish. They're Christians.
Yeah, Messianic, right?
Yeah.
Converts.
Right. And so Messianic Jews are considered by Jews to be Christians because they obviously believe in Jesus Christ. This, I feel like we're going to get banned. I don't even know what you can and can't say anymore. I'm like bugging out. So, and then the guy was a German who grew up in Israel. She is from Kansas, who has gone to Israel, grew up in a Jewish community. So maybe she's Jewish. And I don't know. And it's just, and there's four people he approaches. He only shoots two, but he shoots 21 times.
And, he stood around like he was waiting to get caught. He certainly, made no effort to escape or anything like that. I'm glad you pointed out the backstory. It also does get at this question of like racial Judaism versus spiritual Judaism and how big a factor that is, or who actually cares about that. I did find that factor in this crime to be interesting in that these were sort of atypical choices, right?
Yeah. And especially since like nothing about them, unless that I could tell there that was mentioned, denoted their Jewishness. You know what I mean? I don't know. The whole thing just, I don't like it. I'm not ready to say false flag, obviously, and I won't, because two people are tragically dead. But it just feels weird, especially the walking in afterwards, not making an effort to flee the scene. And if you read his manifesto, which I did multiple times, he's incredibly brilliant. If he wrote that, he's a brilliant person. And his outrage is rightfully placed on the American government. which I also thought was kind of interesting. He wasn't anti-Semitic in his tone on his manifesto at all. No, not one mention of Jews.
Yeah. And so, you know, kind of going off his manifesto, we looking into him, people immediately find that he has this history with the Party of Socialism and Liberation. And, you know, that night, you know, for any of us that were unfamiliar with the PSL, you know, we learned about kind of they've been making a splash in these last few years, especially since the 2020 George Floyd protests. So they've been, you know, a big name on the left as sort of this organizing entity. And, you know, we find out that he's affiliated with them. And they did release a statement afterwards saying that he is not like that deeply affiliated with them. He just, you know, had this quote in a magazine or a newspaper article. But yeah, I mean, that was also certainly an added element, you know, in addition to him being Hispanic, he's also, you know, like from these communist ties.
Yep. From Chicago, which is known as like the second hotbed after Portland of sort of protest and communist activity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, this all, as you said, it checks a lot of boxes and it is all very convenient as for the perpetrator and all the various spheres that he's involved with. Of course, we saw the reactions from Israel, from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who expressed shock at the horrific anti-Semitic murder and linked it to the October 7th Hamas attack, ordered increased security at Israeli embassies worldwide. Foreign Minister Gideon Saar named the victims and accused European leaders of blood libels contributing to the attack. Ambassador to the UN, Danny Dannon, called the shooting a depraved act of anti-Semitic terrorism and an attack on Israel, the Jewish community, and the U.S. So a lot of strong statements there that, you know, tie this as an attack not just on the museum, but the embassies and world Jewry and Israel and the U.S. and, you know, Western civilization and what have you, right?
Well, that's another thing. And Rookie's in the comments bringing up all kinds of crap. That's another thing. Why would he go to the museum during a very specific off-schedule gala when he could find Jews anywhere? You could go to a synagogue. You could go to an embassy. You could go, I'm not trying to give anybody ideas, Jesus, but like, why would he, how would he know?
Like, sure.
And also people keep asking for videos of the deceased couple. I don't think I want to see videos of the deceased couple, but you, that DC is one of the most heavily monitored cities in the world. I think it's the second most heavily monitored city after London. So where's the footage from the exterior of the museum? You know, there's surveillance on the exterior of that building. He walks in, yells "Free Palestine." I think he says it twice or three times, and clearly identifying himself as the shooter. Him walking in there is bizarre in and of itself, and not fleeing the scene. But I guess he wanted to make a statement. And then they handle him with kid gloves, and they're kind of like, "Do you think they just had no idea what happened? They didn't hear the gunshots? I mean, 21 gunshots, and apparently they said Sarah was crawling along the sidewalk."
Surely they had some idea what had happened. I think that he probably wasn't resisting, and so they just did it as they could. But I think there'll be more details coming out in these days. As you said here, it's a very heavily monitored city. I think we'll learn more about how he came to, you know, selecting these two victims or just selecting this particular moment as to be the, you know, the time to strike. But yeah, a lot of question marks here for sure. You know, this gets at the Trump BB relationship as a whole. Do you think this will be something that helps repair them? This will be what is the icebreaker that helps them mend their, you know, supposed cooler relations, or do we see them further break apart on this?
Well, there's been different discussions, and I don't know why. Write Trump a letter and ask him, or I'll tell you why, because this is a diplomatic international foreign policy event, and Austin Metcalf sadly wasn't But you should ask him why he didn't give a hoot about Austin Metcalf, I guess. Now, thank you for throwing me off. Oh, there were many different discussions, right? Some people said, oh, Bibby's the one who's going to suffer for this. Other people said this is a black mark on Trump. I think that this actually gives Israel a good bit of leverage over the United States, right? Bibby, some were arguing that Bibby is responsible for the safety. No, he's not. They're American. The female is an American citizen. They're on American soil. They're not on Israeli soil. If they were at the embassy, then yes, Bibby's right to react and up the security at the embassy. But this didn't happen at the embassy. The embassy has nothing to do with it. So it actually gives Bibby a considerable amount of leverage over Trump to say, you can't keep Jews safe. Why? You have an anti-Semitism problem. We're supposed to be your greatest ally and blah, blah, blah. You have an anti-Semitism problem. What are you going to do about it? That's what I think. And then that also kind of ticks the box of Trump's turning his back on Bibby. Well, now he kind of can't, because apparently the guy was an Israeli citizen and the girl might have been. The answers to that are go both ways, but the guy was an Israeli citizen. So really, it's taking a step back. If I were Bibby, I would exploit this and say Israeli citizens aren't even safe in America, who's supposed to be our greatest ally.
Well, and we basically already kind of are. They're not saying it in those words, but like they're planting the seeds for that discussion. And Rookie, I love you as well. Thank you. The broader context here, you know, as you mentioned, there is a global surge, or just maybe not global, but an online surge in anti-Semitism. The shooting is seen as part of an increase in anti-Semitic incidents following the October 7th, 2023 Hamas attack and the subsequent Israel-Gaza conflict. The incident echoes a 1973 unsolved murder of an Israeli diplomat in Maryland, highlighting recurring violence tied to the Israeli-Palestinian tensions. The security measures, the Israeli embassies worldwide have been placed on high alert. So, we'll probably see that continue. We'll see what Israeli officials, how they sort of use this or they leverage this, in their discussions with DC or with the Trump administration. But I agree. I think if I was BB, I would certainly present it like that. I would say you have an anti-Semitism problem. What are you going to do about it? As for the establishment narrative, when it's presented, it emphasizes the shooting's anti-Semitic and terrorist nature. The way the narrative is presented for this, we have one side which is kind of committed to going all the way on this being an anti-Semitic attack, and then the careful thing that we, on the dissident side have to do is to not overcorrect on the other way, right? So it's to try to like not to avoid ignoring the clear anti-Semitic intent here or anything like that by kind of discussing the false flag aspects of this or the all the convenient ways that it checks all the boxes. Because whenever this happens, it does get frustrating for the way it's covered, where we kind of see what one side is going to do. And so we'll try to overcorrect by going all the way on the other side. And so then you have two competing narratives, which are probably too extreme on each side from the truth.
Right. And it also comes out bit by bit, and you kind of memory hole like the last group of details. So you're not really looking at them in like a cumulative or a holistic way. So now that I'm like looking at it all and we're like sitting down and actually discussing it, we're not getting like screamed at in a space. It's really interesting that they're both heavily involved in the peace process. These were just peaceful, good people, pious people. Like, it's just, there's just too much, it's too perfect. It's so perfect for all the stories. Like, they were about to get married. They were a couple. I remember that the story first came out when they first were shot was that he had the ring in his pocket. It was just, it's just so much. I don't even know what's real and what's not.
And he was a supporter of the Abraham Accords, of course.
Yeah. Like, why would, like, who even identifies themselves as that? I'm a huge proponent of the Abraham Accords. in their political career. Strange. I wonder if he has ties to Kushner.
Could be. I mean, for that. But yeah, I mean, that was the news from the DC shooting. What else happened this week? Trump sits down with the
Israel continued its atrocious assault on Gaza. Operation Gideon's Chariots is continuing. Bibi did come out and say he wants all of Gaza. He let Trump know that. There was an article. I don't know if I still have. Israel plans to take all of Gaza. He said that minimal aid will go to Gaza to preserve U.S. support. So Bibi said he will do the bare minimum required to keep the United States on his side. Excuse me. They've also been heavily bombing Lebanon, the south, and some parts in the east, as well as some parts of Syria. Russian jets took off the other day after there were some bombings in that vicinity. Just a lot of like little things, kind of not even death by a thousand cuts. It's just kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall, and we'll see what noodles sort of stick. We had the Iranian talks that fell apart again. There's plans for another set, which is now the sixth set. Everybody keeps saying that Iran wants. He's not Jewish. We talked about this a thousand times. Jesus, the chat is so distracting today. Anyway, Iran has repeatedly said no enrichment, no deal. And then the United States has obviously said the reverse. They fell apart again this weekend. They have another set, I think, in Rome. Don't quote me. But what do you think about that? I feel like that is everybody says they don't want to go to war with Iran. They don't want to go to war. And I don't think that they do. I don't think the United States does. But is there an element of prolonging the inevitable here? Like, I feel like Israel, like, there's a prophecy that must be fulfilled. Like, Israel will attack Iran. And I think that they think that their window of opportunity is closing to do so, which is another reason why I think this shooting in DC is very well timed.
It's so hard to figure out like what's actually happening, because like as you're trying to follow the like, is Trump and Bibi actually like beefing news and following that and seeing if you actually believe it. And then you follow the Iran stuff, because I mean, obviously Israel wants to make sure that they're trying to put pressure on Trump to, you know, keep that issue going, right? With Iran. I agree. I don't think Trump wants, I think Trump, you know, as I said, he's on his world tour, his Nobel Peace Prize world tour. I think he wants to be a great like war averter. And so he does not want any new conflicts. But I think these peace talks are breaking down for right now. I mean, we have not seen any progress for them in these weeks. So I think we're, you know, we'll have to learn more about what's going on with Trump and Bibi and this Israel relationship. For as of right now, you know, I'm still leaning on that, you know, U.S. and Israel are going to stay the course together. And so for right now, I don't think there's going to be any talks of Iranian peace deal. The last thing I was going to mention for this week was Trump and the South African president. Do you have anything on that?
Well, here's the thing. We got into this is such a hot button issue. This is part of like Trump's sort of strategy, is to kind of amplify these things that aren't really problems and then present himself as the solver, and then he gets a huge dub from the MAGA crowd, right? So this white genocide thing has been a thing since those footage came out years ago of Julius Malema singing "Kill the Boer." And of course, Elon did his whole grandstanding and pearl clutching. Like, he hasn't said done worse things than that. So that went on and he cried about it for years and years and years. And now finally Trump's in power. And I guess he thinks politically he can do something about this. But what was interesting, and we talked about it a lot in spaces, I can't remember if I talked about it on a stream, but the we did get into a conversation with Grok about it, and Grok admitted to lying about the white genocide. So it's just interesting to me that all of this is sort of happening. And then they, I don't know how, why South Africa went to DC, but I'm embarrassed by the way that they were treated while they were there. And then the richest white South African comes and tells you, I leave my door unlocked at night. There's no genocide. And still, like, what are we doing here? Why are we alienating people? But I also see it as another domino of the, you know, this is another one that ticks a lot of boxes. In February, the White House came out and said that they had issue with South Africa's treatment of whites. And then this next paragraph right under it was, they talked about South Africa's case against Israel. So this is retaliation for that. This is also messes with China's Belt and Road Initiative, which they did in Panama already and in Syria. And so now that this messes with that, they want to get in there for raw. They said raw earths, right? Cyril kind of offered them up. You know, we have resources. And Trump clearly wants to get in there. It seems like an exploitation of some violence that is to be expected in that environment and in that scenario. The exploitation of that to privatize or to gain more natural resources or something of that nature.
And South Africa, you know, is no slouch. It's the S in BRICS, right? It is one of the it's one of the BRICS nations, and so it is. You know, it's certainly a heavyweight. I think you're 100% correct. I think this is to do with retaliating for the Israel decision. This is a way to. This is a way that Trump is sort of the meme president, where you could kind of meme a political issue into existence online. And, you know, well, I do think that, like, ironically, I do think these like 50 or so farmers, you know, if they needed asylum, you know, we should give them asylum. I don't think that, you know, the 50 is a high number. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, this is a fascinating issue because of the way that the discourse is inspired from it. You know, you have the people that are like, wait, what? White people are being killed? Like, let's bring them all over here. And then you have the people who are like, wait, white people are being killed? Good. You know, so it's like, those people, you know, piss each other off in the discourse. And then, you know, that's all you end up hearing rather than like trying to understand what are the implications of the South African meeting? Like, why are, as you said, why did they come? Like, why was this so important?
I really liked that. I think we talked about it in the space. That Trump and then played that huge propaganda video and the South African delegation just was kind of like laughing, like, what is this? Like, he even showed him one thing and President Ramaphosa was like, that's not in South Africa. But they don't care. They don't care because they don't, like, the Trump admin and cronies don't care about what the truth is because they are the media. They are the truth tellers. Like, they were laughing and like Trump was trying to like feign, I don't know if he was feigning it, but he looked very concerned. And it's just like, it's just ridiculous. And my question is that we offered them asylum. We said, you know, I think we offered thousands, only 8,000 expressed interest. And then in the end, 59 came.
Right.
So
yeah, I think it's, as you said, it's an issue that, I think you said it perfectly. It's an issue. It's not really an issue, but you present yourself as the person who fixed it. And you know, you get the win.
They need dubs really badly. They really need wins. Like these crazy little, like, you see the posts every once in a while, they'll be like, I voted for this. And it's just like Trump insulting somebody. I'm like,
exactly.
What is he doing? Like, he's not doing anything. Or like the 90 deals in 90 days. We haven't gotten any.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, we're going to stretch our definition of what a deal is to like make that like just work and retroactively.
It's just, it's crazy to me. I feel like, I don't know. I really don't get it. Like, they get these teeny tiny little wins and it's like, I mean, and then that night Trump hosts a crypto dinner and with $1 million a plate. it's bonkers to me what's going on. I mean, I wrote the two articles this week. Please, guys, go check them out. I wrote one about, what were they even about? The Golden Dome and the privatization of the aid in Gaza. I mean, couple that with the announcement this week of a Trump Tower Damascus, a crypto dinner, his tour of the Middle East, the privatization in El Salvador, the privatization in Eastern Europe, the WLF, World Liberty Financial. What is this really? This isn't a presidential term. This looks like they're setting up the chips for what's actually coming after the Trump term. It's too crypto for me. It's too cronyistic. I don't know.
It looks like a big laundering.
It really does. And usually properties are real estate properties are used for laundering money.
Yeah. So. As is crypto. So
match made in heaven. But I think that's all I have for this week. A slow week, but we made it through. Yeah. We made it through. All right. Any closing thoughts?
Well, hopefully this is a busier week, but not with casualties or bombings or anything like that.
Or potential false flags. Or more headaches. Or more white genocide. Thank you, everyone. I hope you have a great week. Catch us on the spaces. We'll be funny, I'm sure. Catch us. I don't know if we're on this week with Nick, maybe on Thursday, but if not, we'll catch you guys on Sunday. Please visit us at www.ddgeopolitics.com. And we will catch you on the next stream.